America the Beautiful. There is adventure to be found around every corner.
And there is no better way to explore it than by staying at one of our country's 14,000 campgrounds.
Our team of correspondents will guide you to the best places to park your rig or pitch your tent.
On each week's episode, we'll give a complete review of one campground, location, activities, amenities, best sites, and tons of other insider intel.
Plus, we'll talk about regional highlights, food, culture, attractions, family fun, and all things great outdoors.
From the East Coast to the West Coast, and from the Great Lakes to the Mississippi Delta, it's time to hit the open road with RVFTA's Campground of the Week. Brett Nielsen is a shortwave radio enthusiast, dry camping expert, and tech geek who loves to explore Utah with his wife and daughter in their Keystone travel trailer. His campground reviews on the RV Family Travel Atlas podcast have been listener favorites. Brett likes to say that time camping isn't spent, it's invested.
Hi, Brett. Welcome to Campground of the Week.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great. It's so great to have you with us, sharing more about the campgrounds that you visited. What else do our listeners need to know about you and your family and your camping?
Well, primarily it's the three of us, my wife, Ashley, my daughter, Lily, and myself. My daughter's 6 years old, and we're based out of Utah, and we find ourselves frequently in state and national parks and various federal places around Utah and the surrounding states. So we're going into our fourth season of RVing and are loving it.
And you're our state park expert, right? There's none of this like private campground nonsense for you.
Yeah, you know, the private versus public debate isn't always an ongoing thing. And I think it might just be more of an East Coast versus West Coast thing because, you know, as I've looked at different activities that have happened at private campgrounds, we just don't seem to have that around us. And I'd like to participate in some of those things, but we just don't have those. So we enjoy our state and federal parks that we've got in our area. And, you know, as you guys have said in the past, you got to get what's best for the area that you're going to. So
conversely, when we look at your state parks, we go, we don't have state parks like that nearby.
Right.
I mean, the campground you're reviewing, the pictures are just stunning.
Right. So speaking of which, tell us where you're taking us this week, Brett.
Yeah, so this week we're headed to Jordanelle State Park, located in northern Utah.
And how far is that from your home base?
Yeah, so it's about 40 minutes out of Salt Lake. I'm kind of on the west side of Salt Lake, so it's a little bit longer drive for me. It's probably close to an hour for me to get there, but still not very far away from home.
So that's a pretty easy weekend getaway for the Salt Lake City crowd.
Yeah, very, very good. And it makes it nice. It's remote. It's up one of our major canyons. It's located on the Jordanelle Reservoir, which is a huge water sport reservoir. And it puts you in an area that is very close proximity to the Heber Valley, which has lots of fun festivals throughout the year, and very short distance from Park City, which is, you know, again, has lots of fun activities all throughout the year.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about the size of the campground.
It's got a combination of tents, cabins, and RV sites. So there's 100 RV sites throughout the entire park. 86 of those are really the main sites that you have access to, and those are all partial hookups. So you get water and electric. The other 14 sites there are full hookup sites, and they're typically reserved during the main season for the work campers that are working there at the campground. You can score those sometimes on the shoulder seasons if they're not being used, and sometimes during the season, but for the most part, it's those 86. And then there's two cabin sites and 28 tent-only sites that are there as well.
Two cabin sites. I imagine those might be hard to book.
Yeah, they're just kind of these lonely cabins that are just out there. I think it's maybe something that they were trying out. I haven't personally been in them, driven by them several times. They look really nice from the outside, and you get a kind of a nice beachfront access down to the lake from the cabin. So you can kind of sit on the porch of the cabin and drink your morning coffee and look out at the lake. So it's they're really well set up in the park.
So it's a big park, but the campground, is it got sort of a cozy feeling, mid-size feeling, or does it feel like a large park? At 86 sites, I guess that's kind of a mid-sized campground.
Yeah, it's like a lot of the state parks. There's different loops, and so things kind of get separated a little bit, and so you don't get this overwhelming feel that there's hundreds of people there. And the way they've tiered the sites, a lot of them have really good views of the lake. So unlike a lot of campgrounds that are just pretty flat, this each loop is kind of on a different tier of a hill. So the outside edge of that loop can look out unobstructed to the lake. And so it actually works out really well, and you don't feel like it's overly crowded even when it's fully populated.
You mentioned there's only two cabins. There's not a lot of hookup sites. So what about booking, Brett?
Yeah, so booking the season for this campground is somewhat short, which is interesting. It opens up May 1st and ends October 31st. So there's only a 5-month window for this campground, and I think that's primarily because it's focused very heavily around the water sports there at the reservoir. And so you have that 5 months that is the open season, and reservations open up 4 months in advance.
That's not very far in advance, right? For most state parks.
Yeah, most of ours around here, they're 4 to 6 months ish, right in that area is what we typically see. So it's pretty average for that. But you know, we're getting ready to come into start really watching the calendar and start putting things down for next year, especially if you're targeting any kind of holiday weekends or anything like that. You want to be on that so you can make sure you get your sites that you want reserved.
So this is the type of thing where maybe like at midnight you're hopping on to do you use Reserve America for this? Or
yeah, okay. It is all of our state parks here in Utah all run off of Reserve America, which is kind of nice and convenient. There's pros and cons to the site, but we do like it. But yeah, sometimes there's one really big event that's called Fire on the Water. It's in July. They do fireworks. They have a big boat parade where everybody decorates their boats with lights and you know tours around on the lake. And it is very much a get on at midnight, you know, 4 months in excuse me, 5 months in advance and book your site, because it will fill up in a couple of days for that event. So
great. How much? What does it cost to camp here?
So it's not bad. If you score one of the full hookup sites, they're $28. The partial hookups are $25. So
I'm calling that cheap, Brett.
It's very
We're calling
cheap.
That
I'm not calling
bargain.
That not bad. I'm calling that cheap.
And I love the fact that it's just $3 more for full hookup.
Right.
Like, I imagine that decision's really tough. You know,
do I
partial or the full? Do I spend the $3 a night?
Exactly. We were in a similar situation in another campground this year, and the difference between no electric and electric was $5, and it was like, this is a no-brainer. Like, who would sign up for the non-electric sites? It's like,
right,
just pay the $5 and get the power. So
I'll pay the $5 for you.
Yeah, exactly.
All my goodness sake, enjoy. All right, so what else is at the campground?
Amenities. What kind of amenities?
So they've got a good general store. I would liken it to a 7-Eleven almost. You know, it's your typical convenience store that would be associated with any kind of recreation area. They have a full water sports store as well that, you know, carries various supplies that you might need if you're out boating or something to that effect. Then they have two different playgrounds there at the campground. They've got washing machines.
Let me stop you for 1 second.
Yeah,
playgrounds,
for sure.
Modern, nice, old fashioned, rinky dink. What kind? We always want to know, are the playgrounds
right.
Nice?
They're more on the modern side. I would say they're not, you know, they're not wood and big rubber tire playground
with snakes in them.
Yes, yeah, no, these are you know, more modern plastic. They're on a wood chip or a bark kind of ground, and they're good playgrounds. My daughter's been over to both of them there several times, and you know, can spend definitely some time there climbing around
Lily
on the climbing
approved.
Walls. And it is Lily approved,
okay,
for sure. Then the other amenities, washing machines, if you're going to be there for a while or you're in transit, they've got the washing machines there. They've got showers. Of course, a dump station there on site if you don't score one of the full hookup sites. Then where it's heavily water-based with the lake there, we've got a lot of boat docks and launches to be able to launch your stuff into the water. Or if you don't come with anything, they actually offer rentals, and you can rent everything from, you know, gas-powered pontoon boats or fishing boats to jet skis and kayaks and canoes and all those kind of things. So
is the water really busy? Like, say you wanted to pull out on a kayak, are there boats buzzing back and forth all over the place, or is it big enough that it's pretty safe and mellow for everybody?
It is. If you're there on a really popular weekend, it's crazy. It's just a madhouse. But the boats, the power boats and stuff, all launch off of one side of kind of a peninsula, and then any non-motorized watercraft launch off another side. And that other side where the non-motorized stuff launches is more of an alcove that the boats tend not to come into. So there's people that'll do like stand-up paddle boarding and that kind of stuff over in that area. And it's doable because the boats are typically out on the lake at that point, because everybody in the non-motorized stuff can kind of stay in this alcove. There's nothing preventing you from going out where the boats are. But it does, especially during busy weekends, it does get a lot of boat traffic. So,
and being a reservoir, the water quality in the photos just looks like it's really beautiful, clean water, obviously.
Yeah,
right?
It is. And one of the things that's attached here is running through this area. This area that this is located, the Heber Valley, is one of our favorite places to go throughout the year. I'm a fly fisherman, and one of our Blue Ribbon rivers runs through there. It's the Provo River that's split up by a couple of different reservoirs. Jordanelle being one of them. And so offers great fishing in the reservoir as well as the rivers that are flowing into it and out of it. So
I'm going to put you on the spot. I want you to promise right now that you will teach Stephanie and I how to fly fish in Utah one day.
I will be happy to do that. And by the time you guys make it out here, I might actually be a little bit better. I've only been doing it for a couple of years, so I'm a hack at best.
Definitely better than we are. The fishing poles in this house have Spider-Man on them, Brad.
Oh, yes. Okay.
All right, what do we got next?
So the overall layout of the site, like I said, you've got, you know, multiple loops and that. It's a mix of pull through and back in sites with pretty good spacing overall. And so we've been happy with all the sites that we've had there. There is a fair amount of lack of trees. I wish there were more trees in the campsites, but there are some on some of the sites have several trees within them. But the spacing is good enough that you end up feeling like you're not on top of the neighbor next to you. So,
and more trees might cut off your water views, correct?
Exactly. So and that's one of the things that I think that's why they haven't planted those trees, because it would just end up obstructing somebody's view of the water, which is really why you go to this campground.
So when should we go, Brett?
You know, honestly, our favorite times are beginning of the season, end of the season. The middle of the season, it gets warm, it gets crowded. So we were just up there at the end of last month. Right in that kind of October time frame is a really good time at the end of the season. And of course, right there at the beginning of the season is another good time. That's when the weather's still real favorable. And it's not getting too warm in the middle of summer or anything like that. Of course, with power sites, you can run the air conditioner and cool off, and you got a big lake there. You can go jump in if you get too hot.
I did want to ask. So you can swim in the reservoir. It's not a water source, it is a water source, and they do let you swim. How does that work?
Yeah, I'm not aware of any restrictions around getting in the water. They allow boating and water skiing, stand up paddle boarding. I didn't see any restrictions whatsoever about actually getting in the water. There are some restrictions when it comes to animals in the water. So if you travel with your dogs or something, you can have them there in the campsite, but there are some restrictions around taking them down to the waterfront that they don't want the dogs right down there by the water. So
when you're drinking water and you live in this area, you know it's not going to smell doggy.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. So.
All right. So thank you so much, Brett. We're going to be back in a couple of seconds, and we're going to hear all about the area and what there is to do around the campground.
Welcome back to RVFTA's Campground of the Week, and welcome back to you, Brad.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Every time we have you on to review a campground, I just desperately want to go to the campground. This place sounds terrific. So, but what is there to do in the area? What else is there around this state park?
Yeah, so like I said, kind of leading into the break there, that the Heber Valley is just a phenomenal place to go. There's so much to do. There's tons of different festivals throughout the year. One that we went to, there's a couple of different names. It's really called the Soldier Hollow Classic. It's a sheepdog festival where they bring sheepdogs in from all around the world, and they herd sheep and have a big contest. And they've got a lot of different agility things, and it's a great family event to take kids to. It's especially if they like dogs and animals. There's lots of activity around that. You've got the Fire on the Water celebration in July, which is a great time to be up there. You can't really beat fireworks over the lake like that.
I think that sheepdogs could beat fireworks over the lake. Frankly, awesome.
Sheepdogs heard my kids, they'll beat fireworks.
Yeah, I think they would. They're pretty good. and what impresses me is the whistles that the guys call down, call up to the hill. And just through whistles, they're controlling the dog coming down the hill.
It's amazing. Maybe that's what I need, Brett. Maybe I just need a good whistle.
Oh, good whistle. We'll get you one.
Maybe that would just improve everything around here.
You just put your lips together and blow.
That's right. It's easy. So, and then, of course, it's Jordanelle Reservoir there, but it's very short distance to Deer Creek Reservoir and Strawberry Reservoir, which are two other ones in the area. So it's a nice short jump to either one of those, which also have tons of water sports and activities on both of those.
Do any of them have any walking trails around them? I know that's a big thing around here at our reservoirs. Is that something that you see out there in Utah a lot?
I haven't seen it. Jordanelle did have a nature kind of preserve, if you will, on the other side of the lake. And we traveled over there this season, and it looked mostly abandoned. And I've been trying to figure out online like what the deal is, because I've got a buddy that lives up there, and his kids went to it last year for a field trip with their school, and so he was really surprised. But the parking lot was all overgrown, and all the buildings looked abandoned. It looked like nobody had been there in a long time. So
was there like a big sign that said "School kids keep out"?
Yeah, no, it was right there. They had the fee booth and everything. So I'm still trying to figure out what's going on over there. So
you're saying that all of your state parks aren't perfect and beautiful?
No, we just don't talk about those other ones.
Right. All right. So we're not recommending that.
That's right.
You can give us an update on
Brett
that.
Brett just wants us to know that Utah's not heaven. It's almost heaven.
It's almost heaven, yes. So, and then, just there in Heber, some of the places that we like to eat, for good Mexican, we go to Tarahumara. Pizza, it's Cafe Galleria, and burgers is Timpfreeze. And Timpfreeze, I would say, is your typical road food type of place. Ooh. There's basically no inside seating whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Everybody's out next to the road. You get your burgers in a basket and go out there and fries, milkshake, and a burger, and you really can't go wrong with that.
And
so
it sounds like that might be your favorite out of the three, or am I wrong?
Well,
too?
I would say the first two, the Tarahumara Mexican restaurant and the Cafe Galleria pizza place, are where we frequent the most. So because Timpfreeze is usually pretty busy, so we can get in and out of the other ones a little bit better.
And all those are relatively close to the campground?
Yeah, they're probably within 15 minutes. So, because the campground is just a little bit removed from the actual Heber Valley itself, and then these would just be a short drive, 10, 15 minutes in the car. So,
all right. So, what else shouldn't people miss if they're visiting?
Well, if you're coming in from out of the state, you have to go into Park City. Park City has a lot of mining history, and it's just a great town. It's a big base for the Sundance Film Festival every year. There's a great main street that's just got a bunch of shops that are fun to go in and out of. That's more on the adult side of the house than any kind of kid entertainment. Mm-hmm. Anytime we take our daughter, she tends to get a little bit bored as we're walking up and down the street, because there's just not a lot of kid stuff.
Right. She's not anxious for like a Robert Redford spotting or anything.
No,
like that.
No. She just doesn't get that. I'm sure.
Dad,
at some
take
point...
me to another. Dad, take me to another indie film.
Yeah, exactly. So, and there are a couple brew pubs and those kind of things, and nice restaurants there on Main Street. So, if you've got an adult night out or something like that, or you're traveling without kids, that's a great place to go. I was up there fairly recently and was talking to some of the people in one of the museums that's up there, and asked them if they was any kind of mine tours, and they said the last last people quit doing mine tours back in the 90s. So that was a little unfortunate because I thought that could be
a couple of decades off.
The 1890s or the 1990s?
I couldn't believe it. So
Brett wants his mine tours. That's such an insight into Brett. He wants his mine tour.
I love it.
All right, so there's a nearby fishery too.
Yeah, so the Blue Ribbon Fishery, I mentioned that right before the break, is the Provo River. So it starts in the Uinta Mountains, which is a beautiful place to go in itself, and that's considered the upper Provo. That comes into the Jordanelle Reservoir, and then below the Jordanelle Reservoir is considered the mid-Provo River. That feeds into Deer Creek, and then anything below Deer Creek is the lower Provo. So there's kind of three distinct rivers there. That are all top quality rivers for fishing, great for fly fishing, and there are some options there if you're not into fly fishing and want to do other styles of fishing, those are available as well. But these are premier places that we get people all over the world that travel in to fish these stretches of water. So what
I'm wondering now after hearing you talk about all of this is, are there a lot of outfitters and sort of businesses that will help you do these sports, or is it mostly independent? Is it people showing up with their own water, you know, their boats, their skis? If I show up there when we're coming cross country, can I find an outfitter to take me out and fly fish with me or to take me water skiing?
Well, Brett's going to, so we won't need to spend money at the outfitter.
Not everybody's lucky enough to have that connection.
We'll just take Brett to the Timp Freeze.
Yeah.
Exactly. Take me to the Timp Freeze, and I'll take you out on the river for the day.
So I'll buy a milkshake.
Anybody else that isn't that lucky, Brett?
There are several. Several of the fly shops or the fishing shops down in Salt Lake, they offer tours all over, and there are some that are based right out of the Heber area.
Okay.
That would be more than happy to take people out for the afternoon and get them going, and they can outfit you with everything, you know, waders, poles, flies, whatever you need, and can get you all set up. There's several options there as far as just outfitters go, even for off-road vehicles. You know, if you wanted to take an ATV up in the hills or something like that, there's those kind of options as well, all in that area. So as you get into the winter time frame, some of those groups then start renting snowmobiles and other things that you can go out and either take snowshoes or snowmobiles or whatever and go off into trails up into the mountains in that around that area. So.
All right, so now, obviously, we all want to go to Jordanelle State Park, but
Yes. Nobody's
perfect. So tell us, what do you think is
it's a little improvement.
Aim for improvement, right?
Yeah, aim for improvement. Something that they could actually do something about in the facility. Mm-hmm. So the thing that we've noticed consistently from there is the facilities that they have, the buildings that they have there that house the restrooms and the showers and that kind of stuff. You end up having a little bit of light pollution that comes in from those at night. They've got those typical bright kind of orange lights.
The security lights.
Yeah.
Right?
Stephanie hates those.
Yes. Yeah.
Hates those. Pet peeve. Have I said that too much on our other podcast? I don't know, but I hate them.
Yeah. So, you know, that's one of the things that if they could just put a little downward shield on it, mm-hmm. so it's putting light down and not out, mm-hmm. I think that would help tremendously. So if you are sensitive to that kind of thing and your rig doesn't have blackouts, come prepared with something to black out your windows, because you will have that orange light shining. And if you're anywhere near those buildings,
okay.
Easy thing to do. Just don't book by one of those buildings. Get on Google Maps, zoom in, see where the buildings are, and just get a sight away from them. And you'd be safe that way. So.
Okay, good tip. What else? Anything else?
Yeah, so one of the things I mentioned, you know, the Fire on the Water celebration, that's in July. You've got to get on at midnight and book. So that comes up in March that you would want to be getting online and booking. And for those that need some type of cellular connection, if they're work travelers traveling on the road, get something a little bit farther from the water. As I mentioned, it's a kind of a tiered campground. So mm-hmm. the closer to the water you are, the lower you are. And the cell phone signal and TV signals down by the water are really bad. If you get higher up on the hill, you can get a much more reliable signal up there, both TV and cellular, if you need that while you're traveling.
That's a great tip. Thank you
very
much.
Great tip. And thank you so much for coming on to RVFTA's Campground of the Week.
You bet. It's my pleasure. Looking forward to the next one.
And we'll see you at the campground.
Indeed.
Thank you so much for tuning in to RVFTA's Campground of the Week.
Links to the campground and regional attractions can be found in the show notes at campgroundoftheweek.com.
And don't forget to check out the other podcasts in our network.
RV Family Travel Atlas is hosted by yours truly, Jeremy and Stephanie Puglisi, and available every Friday morning.
And Girl Camper, Going Places, Doing Things, is hosted by Janine Pettit and released every Tuesday morning.
Join us next Thursday for another great review from our team of campground correspondents who will inspire you to hit the open road and explore America the Beautiful.